This is the first session of a series of two lessons on, as an introduction to drawing from the right side of the brain. And I am Lita Hunt, and I hope to get to know all of you folks. Since we've got a nice group here today, we'll get to know you before the end of the session, I hope. We have this in two sessions, knowing full well that even that time is just barely enough time for an introduction to the subject at all, but hopefully we'll get you started on it, and so you, from there on, you're on your own, and you can add some information as you go along. Come on over here, we saved the space for you, okay? Before we go any further, since this is considered the first session, I'll let you know a little bit about where I'm coming from on this and what got me started and some other information that might be of help to you people. The book that was written and put out by Betty Edwards on drawing from the right side of the brain is a really good way to start on this. This book is a culmination of about 10 years of research and got her going on researching it, because ever since she was a small person, people kept saying to her, well, oh, you can draw, you know, and just as if the other side of the coin would be, well, the people that can't draw. And she began to wonder, well, why is it that she seemed to be able to do this with ease and other people couldn't? And so that led to her research into this. And she talks about it in the book, and then the lessons, examples, and some of the little exercises we'll do are taken from this book. So it'll be a good introduction for you if you do happen to buy it. It is in our bookstore over here. I think there were some more copies still down there.
I brought yours with you, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, you can try our bookstore over here, because we've been ordering it all summer long, and hopefully there's a couple copies still left for you people to buy. Then, that would be found in the art department of any bookstore that you might go to. If you're interested in delving into this right brain research some more, a good place would be to go to the psychology departments of any bookstore or any library, and you would be able to find these two books from amongst the other ones that you could get. But these are really, really good. And this first one, Left Brain, Right Brain by Springer and Deutsch. And if you want, it'll be up here and you can get a hold of it. You can look in here for the ISBN number if you like, or be able to order it yourself. This is really good, talking about both the left brain and the right brain. And then here's a really good book that's used as a textbook at the University of Washington. In fact, both of these books in there is called Right Brain, and it's by Thomas Blakely. And it again is very good on delving into the really neat things about the right brain and being able to use the right brain to advantage. This one, by the way, is written by a man who's been he's a multimillionaire, and he has worked his way up through inventing and using his right brain to advantage. And so he decided that he was going to share that information with people, which I think is really great. So all three books, they're just beginning researching this, but they would be a good place for you to start if you're interested in going on past what we're talking about today and Thursday. Okay. What all is this about the right brain, and why on earth would we want to be able to use it? How is it going to help us as artists? How many of you people can remember way back when you were about 9 or 10 years old?
I can remember.
Good. Okay. Maybe if we talk about it for just a second, it'll bring it back to memory. What grade were you in about that time? About
when I was 9. Fifth. The teachers in the school, it was over them, but they skipped me ahead twice, yeah, half grade each time.
Oh dear.
So I was 1 year ahead of where I should have been.
Uh-huh. All right, fourth grade.
It wasn't a good idea, but that's what they did, because when I got in high school, my age caught up with me.
Yeah. Okay, when you're 9 or 10 or 11 years old, you were hitting the fourth or fifth grade and maybe into sixth grade. If you can remember back the assignments that you had then, as far as drawing were concerned, did you even get a chance to do much artwork?
Oh, we always had drawing as part of our curriculum, you know, in the fifth grade.
Good, you were one of the lucky ones then, because a lot of the school systems, about in the fourth grade, they begin to say, oh my goodness, we've got to get these kids to up to the point where they're ready for junior high or high school, and some of them don't know how to multiply yet, you know, the way they should, and they don't know how to read as well as we think that they ought to be able to read by now. And so the important subjects come first, your reading and writing and arithmetic, you know, the three R's, what we've always said. And those would be considered the subjects that you need to use your left brain for. And so about that time, we cancel out on the things that would use our right brain to advantage. Your left brain is involved in any kind of communication skill that you're going to be doing where it's a verbal thing at all in any way. And so that when I'm talking to you now, and when you people are listening, you're using your left brain. What happens though is somebody in a few minutes is probably going to start daydreaming a little bit. And then at that point, you'll be turning the right brain on. From now on, no longer is daydreaming a sin anymore. It's just still using part of your brain. It's using a different side of your brain. And we used to really give kids a lot of trouble with that. You know, if you were caught daydreaming in class, you got hit for it, didn't you? And what even made it matters worse is that probably you had to stay in during recess, you know, if they. And mainly because maybe you didn't get all your work done. You didn't get your reading or your writing or your arithmetic done. So and the things then that you missed out on was when recess time came, and you could have gone out and done a right brain type of operation when you were in doing your playing your ball games and things like that. Well, you had to stay in and continue using your left brain some more. Either that or when maybe you had art once or twice a week, but if you hadn't done your all your mathematics and your reading, your spelling, and needed to be done, well, then you couldn't go and take an art class that day, or you couldn't go to music because you hadn't gotten everything else done that you needed to get done. And that needed would be, in this case for us, would be quotes, you know, within quotes, because now it's beginning to be realized very strongly that you need these other things using the right brain just as much. And that possibly all our curriculum is having to be redesigned so that it's going to take into consideration the people who are more right brain dominant and learn better that way than the ones that will learn with their left brain. Now you have both sides of your brain. Everybody's got these two brains up there. We all start with the same. And unless something has happened to you because of an accident or an injury of some kind, you know, something goes wrong when you got both sides that can work equally well. But for the most part, we begin to learn and you'll just start listening and everything, and one side of the brain gets more exercise than the other. The other thing that happens is that we, because the right side can't do the talking, it can't verbalize and can't speak with you and give out the information that way, we have a tendency in the past to say, well, okay, that side isn't as needed, so it's less dominant then, it's subdominant, you know, that word sub and how it seems kind of goes along with the idea about being less than, something is less than, so, okay, the left side would be the dominant side of your brain, and that is considered important. And so everything that you talk about the two brains, always the word, the connotation that goes along with whatever expression has been used so far for the right side has always been a kind of not quite as important as and things like that, with going along with that idea. The left brain has been called the conscious side. It's a side of your brain that you use most of the time when you're being just a conscious awakening and everything that you're doing for the most part of the day because you're listening. You know, talking with somebody, writing, doing all those kinds of skills. And then the unconscious side, we've often wondered about that, and here it turns up that it's the right side of your brain that's doing that kind of work for you. And the only reason we've called it out as being unconscious or quiet side is because it just won't verbalize for you. This has come out in our culture in many different ways then. The reason your left brain, with the verbal skills that it has and everything, has been called out as a needed side, the dominant side, is because it's what the thing that makes us different from the other animals, isn't it? They can't do the thinking, and they can't do the verbalizing and talking to you. So the other animals, they talk in a different way, but I mean, they're not talking back and forth like we can. Language skills, you know, and write a language and read a language and say a language. And so that's why it was considered so important. You had to have this information. You had to be able to use your left brain, but the right brain could, well, we weren't too sure all what it really did for us. So now we know that the right brain does all the spatial thinking for you. Now both of the brains can do that, but the right brain is the one that does it to advantage. Everything that you take in through your eyes or your thinking that has anything to do with spatial relationships of any kind is all done with the right brain. And what makes it neat is that the right brain can take in that kind of information. It can send it across to the left brain if the left brain needs any of that information, and so it's your left brain that can verbalize about it if the information is sent over from the right brain. So what happens? That means that you have to have some connection between these two brains, and there is a connection. There's a cord that goes between the two, and the information can flip back and forth from one to the other. The way we found out that one brain is more, it handles one type of information better than the other one, and your brains seem to know this too, and so they can pass the information. They do, like the left brain will say, oh, well, that's not my bag, and you know, send the, say, go ahead, right brain, you take over. But the way we found all of this out was, part of it was not by accident, but it was a result of trying to take care of another problem, and that was the problem of epilepsy. And people that had epilepsy have the short circuiting that goes on with the electrical information and, you know, the signals that go between the two brains. And so what happens when they have these people with a problem with epilepsy, if they would cut the cord between the two, then they solved the problem of the epilepsy. So that was no longer a problem, but they created another problem. And what happened is that then they discovered that if you would give the right brain a message that it could not verbalize about it, but you gave it instructions to verbalize, and you couldn't get, then it could not verbalize for you and couldn't say it. So if you wanted any verbalizing to be done, you had to give the left brain that kind of a message. Now how they found it out is by covering up half of the, one of the sides, one of the eyes, and covering half of it so that the message only went to the other brain. Like if they would show something that they wanted to have verbalized, they wanted to be able to have a person say what they had seen, they showed them a picture that would only go to half of the eye that would cover up this, the right eye, okay, and by covering up half of the left eye, then the message only went to the right brain. But then they asked the person, what was it, what did you saw? Okay, the left brain then was the only one that was possible that could say it aloud, but that brain wasn't allowed to function at that time. It was only the image only went to the right brain. And so the person couldn't say it aloud what it was and couldn't name it. It's the naming of something and saying it, being able to verbalize and say it. So, but what they did then is that they turned around and I put down some Scrabble letters, you know, how the letters are in different blocks, and they just put the blocks down in front of the person that could still work with their right brain. And they could put the word out, like if they saw a cat, if the picture was a cat or something, then they could actually put the letters together then that said cat, that read that. But they couldn't say it aloud at all. So, and they've got many, many other experiments, and you can read about them in many of these books, and all kinds of experiments, the same type of thing about that they then discovered the different things that the right brain could do to advantage and the ones that the left brain could do to advantage. A couple of you people have read this book or part of it. Got anything you want to add at this point or any questions? Have we even got this far on it? Does that go along with what you read, learned? Okay. Okay, so then they were delving more into this and finding out what can the right brain really do then, and how neat is it for us? When we're talking about the spatial relationships, a person using their right brain, when you go into any area, it'll be your right brain that'll tell you if something is in front of something else, or they're side by side, if something's covering up, and so you can't, you know, that you can see one thing and part of it, and then you see another thing behind it, and all those kind of relationships. Can you, just for a moment, everybody, just look anywhere in the room, doesn't matter where you're looking, where you can see something in front of something else and follow an edge. What your right brain is going to be able to do for you now is follow an edge of anything and see just the edge of an arm maybe or something, and see how it hits an elbow, would hit the table, and then sense what happens with part of it going in front of, or which line you would actually see then in edges that you see. Some going in front of something else and whether they cover that. You could just look anywhere in the room and just kind of sense that. Probably for the first time for some of you people, you may be seeing the shapes of something that you never noticed before, but don't worry about it being what it is. It's just an edge. It's a line that crosses in front of another one, an edge of something. Okay, for drawing then, what's going to happen is that when you are drawing anything from now on, you'll be able to look for those kinds of relationships instead of naming the thing and saying like a chair is a chair is a chair, you know, and I've got to draw it like this. It no longer is a chair, but it's certain shapes and edges of things and where they come in contact with another edge and what happens and what you see and what you don't see at that point. So that you no longer have to worry about what something is. Because that's what happened when you were about in 9th or 10th or 11th, those ages, 9 or 10 or 11 in there, and about the 3rd or 4th or 5th grade, you were very, very, very concerned at that time about what something was. And then you drew it so that it looked just like what you thought it ought to look. Up until that point, you could have drawn a foot and maybe put 6 toes on one foot, you know, and maybe 3 or 4 on another one, and it really wouldn't have been a problem to you psychologically or any other way. You know, you knew what you drew, and it was all right. And all your work up until that point was accepted, too, as probably being all right. Remember when you used to draw, you drew a picture and then you wrote a story for under it? You had these pieces of paper that had a blank part at the top where you could draw the picture, and then you wrote underneath it. And that was your chance. You got to use both sides of your brain, but you didn't. Nobody told you that you were, and you weren't worried about that at all either. But you drew pictures, and maybe all the toes were there. Maybe you left the foot off sometimes, but it wasn't a concern. Okay, along comes this age about 9, and all of a sudden, in your growing up, your brain starts to tell you, "I want to have things just the way they really are, very realistic." And you might find yourself being able and very willing to sit there by the hour to draw some little tiny details. That's the time you start probably drawing little people like this with 5 toes on every foot, okay? And you even put fingernails on, and you even try to get the eyelashes on your people. And how many of you remember drawing eyelashes on a face that was looking straight at you? And you sense that you could draw the eyelashes maybe curved off to this side, going for one eye. But what do you do when you cross over to the other eye? Do you draw the curved line the same way, or do you want to draw it out that way? What happens? At that age, you began to be really concerned about that kind of thing. And if you drew them different ways, you wondered, is that right? Or when I get closer to my nose, what happens then? Do they still go off that way? If I look in the mirror, it doesn't seem to do that. They seem to go this way, but how do you draw something that goes straight out and looking at you? And about that time, then, that's very important for you. And if you can't do it just the way you think it ought to be, you become probably concerned enough to play around with it on your paper for many hours, or to go and ask somebody, how do you do this? And you really want to know. And then maybe brother or sister, big brother or sister come along and they look at your work. They'll lean over your shoulder. You ever had anybody lean over and say, what's that? Is that anybody here? Maybe you were the big brother or sister that did it to somebody else and you even. And here's this kid that's been working so hard at drawing something and doing it correctly and realistically. And boy, for them, if you put a lot of effort in something and somebody says it that way, that's a real put down, isn't it? So what happens to a lot of people about that age? They decide, huh, well, drawing doesn't seem to be something I can do very well. At least it's not going to be acceptable. The teacher wants me to do it this way, or some my parents don't know what I'm drawing. They keep asking me, what is it that I'm drawing? And so you know that you have better experiences in doing other things, and so you cancel out on drawing. You say, well, drawing is something I can't do. And that may be the last time you ever really start trying to draw very much. So it could be at this stage for you folks that maybe if you haven't drawn very much since then, that your drawing could be at that stage where you decided for yourself you couldn't draw and you walked away from it and you said, well, that was the last time, I'll try that. I'm going to go on to something that I can get good, positive, and, you know, comments from people and everything. Maybe you're not all that way. Maybe you're all artists. How many of you are artists that are here?
Part Irish. Part and quarter Irish.
How about being an artist?
Not a great one.
Okay, so we're all in the same boat kind of, right? We remember back when we wanted to be able to draw, and maybe you're at that stage too where you want to be able to draw. So now this is, you have another opportunity. If you turn on the right brains, maybe we can get the right, correct one going for us and we can be able to draw some more. Let's see, there's other things that the right brain can do for us better than the left brain. And maybe if you want to remember about about the three eyes, if you're into thinking and remembering things at all like that. But if you're going to be any inventive idea that you have, anything intuitive, all your intuitive thinking, and all this imagination that you've got stored up in your head is all on the right side of your brain. So if you want to bring on the ideas and everything, then that's the brain you want to turn on. Now, how on earth can you turn one on and turn the other one off? Tests have been done on babies, and of course, babies can't tell you which side of the brain they're using at the moment, so they're a good example, you know. And they put heat sensors on babies' heads, and they discovered that when they put music on, and they're just listening to music, that this right side of their head tends to get warmer and actually the temperature rises. And what's going on is because that side of the brain is being used more than the other side at the moment. And anytime you use anything in your body more than in something else, what happens to it? What happens if I go like this for a while? What's going to happen to this arm? Get stronger? Yeah? Okay, what's happening while it's working up to getting stronger. That's going to be the final outcome, but what's happening right now?
Blood circulation is going to that arm.
Right, blood circulation is going in here more than this arm. So what, if blood's going through there, what also do you notice about yourself?
Heat.
Heat? Right, what about heat?
You're getting more into this arm.
Okay, so this arm is getting warmer, isn't it, right now? All right, you notice if you're running and you're using a lot of part of you, you get heated up, don't you? Okay, wherever the circulation is going, more so, then the circulation, then the temperature is rising in that area, and also you can tell growth is going to take place, because anytime you have better circulation in any part of your body, well then also growth is going to take place at that place. So, we want our right brain to really take off and be stimulated and do a lot for us, well then it'd be a good idea to use it. Okay, so they found out then that the right brain was being warmed up, or the head, they could feel the temperature rise on the head with the sensors. And then they started talking to them, turned off the music and turned on the talking. And what happened? You can't hear with the verbs, you know, words, and understand words or anything else like that. So the left brain started taking over then, and the warmth went to that side and the heat sensors went up because the temperature was going up. So since they were working with somebody that couldn't let them know at all what was going on, That was a good indication about the variations. And now that it happens even, you know, right away, the minute you're born. One thing about the verbal skills seem to come on a little bit later for more and more maturity that you have, of course, you know, like you listen and after a while you know how to talk, you learn to talk a little later. Boys mature later than girls. Remember, that's always been a phrase that you've heard for years, you know, and you think, well, when you send a boy and a girl at the same age to kindergarten, the girl's going to be quite a bit ahead, quite probably, in being able to do anything verbal skills or language type things at all. The boys are more apt to be more, well, they're working with space relationships all of the at that time. And the thing is that even before a baby is born, the girls are ahead of the boys. At the time of birth, they're almost, as far as the left side of the brain is concerned, they're about, in their ability to understand things, are about a month ahead, 4 weeks about. Even, what is it, about nine weeks along, the girls are already ahead. Doesn't take them very long to be 2 weeks off, ahead of the boys even. So that's even before they're born and all. So what happens is that the boys are just a little bit later on catching up. But eventually, you know, that can even happen, or maybe even go the other way. Well, what happens to you, which brain you're going to be using the most is the one that gets the most exercise, really. And so that you want to give the brain that you want to use the exercises to do. Okay, for a moment, let's take just a moment, and you people, I bet you're all into doodling at one time in your life, aren't you? Or maybe even now. You got pencil and paper there? Why don't you take just a moment and just do some kind of doodling on your paper. You're going to have plenty of other pieces of paper to use for, so you don't have to worry about being limited in any way by the size of the paper. Just do the kind of doodling that you've probably done for years, anything at all. Just draw lines, things, whatever you do. And don't worry about this. Nothing's going to be graded here or anything else like that, so you don't have to worry about that.
Doodling.
Just go ahead and do some doodling that you enjoy doing. See if you can find an interesting part of a little picture that you've done. Because we're all, and anything we ever draw, you have a sense quite often of wanting maybe even to erase a whole section, tear it off, or do something like that. But if you do like this, you're going to be doing what we call cropping, and all you're doing is cutting off, you're framing a certain part of your picture and cutting off the rest of it temporarily from your visual scene that you've got, and seeing if there's any part in what you're doing that you kind of enjoy that looks kind of neat. Maybe. Anybody find anything like that? A couple of you people with small pictures don't have that much to work with, but I bet you could still find the best. Well, pick out the little best part of anything that you've drawn. The best part, the part you enjoy the most, part that you could kind of block off and say, ah, that looks kind of neat. I like the way one line went over against another one or something like that. Right now you're using your right brain because you're looking for relationships and things that look good. What would you pick on yours? If you had to pick out a certain little area. Okay, can you on yours then too? Okay, can you, now in your thinking, now with your right brain, you have made a choice because it's a spatial relationship that seemed to stand out as being very nice. What you're doing then is sending that information also to your left brain so that it can keep that information on hand, because if you would tell your thinking now, with your left brain, look at that and say, what kind of lines did I do there? I did curved lines. Curved lines would be naming something, and that's telling your left brain what it is. So that if you wanted to go back some time and do something else like that, you would call it out, I'll do curved lines. But the relationship of one curved line to another one will be a right brain thing. So you can use both of your brains with their relationships if you want to, and how they coordinate with each other. You can. So it depends on if you are telling your brain anything and naming it in any way that is a left brain thing. So can you pick something out, each of you, in your drawing and give your, feed your left brain some information about that, about the little part of the drawing that you like. Okay, any relationship that you're going to sense and remember as one line went this way, and first of all the line went up that way and then down this way and things like that, and then it bumped into another edge or something, that would all be right brain type thing. But if you were telling yourself, I did a heavy line here, and then would need to do it again, or would you name the kind of line it is or anything like that, that's all left brain. Okay, something like this can always be fun. No matter how much you're even doodling or any drawing you do, you're always going to know and be able to sense that some part of it is better than others, and if you wanted to do it again, I could cancel out on all that. A part of it, but keep part of it. Maybe make a picture out of just a section of it in some way. Okay. I think maybe a little bit more information about your right brain. We would, how many of you, we talked about daydreaming, and how many of you dream very much or remember your dreams that you have at night? Good. Yeah. Are any of you people able to actually wake up and even write it down or do something with the information that you had during your dream?
Never tried.
Well, if you can train yourself to do it, it would be really great. For the folks who do, do you do that in ideas that you have and answers to questions that you have?
I just try to write down what happened in the dream. Mm-hmm. And I haven't analyzed them yet.
Okay, what happened for Einstein is he discovered for himself that his answers to his questions that he had, even about all his theory work on relativity and everything else, he had originally in a dream, which is right brain type operation. Okay, but then he trained himself to be able to wake up and remember that and write it down immediately. Because then, with his writing it down, then he transferred the information to his left brain, and it was there for the left brain to work with. And this is, and then the left brain could take over and kind of act like a secretary and write down all the rest of the information about it, analyze it, because analyzing is a left brain operation, and could work with it and play out the whole process then. So it was the right brain originally that gave it the inventive idea, the intuitive thinking about an answer to something. The kind of thing that makes you go, aha, I got it, you know? Okay, there once there was a king, apparently, who, I think this is a true story, but I'm not too sure. Okay, there was a king, and somebody was trying to apparently, or at least he had a feeling that they were trying to pawn off a crown on him, which should have been solid gold, but he had a feeling, an intuitive feeling, that maybe this had some silver in it. And he was, okay, so he had this problem of trying to figure out how on earth he could find out for sure about this. And so he was in the bathtub, okay, and he happened to notice and realize when he sunk himself down into the bathtub, what happens to the water level?
It rises,
doesn't it? Okay, so it's a displacement type of operation that's going on. When you fill up, your water rises when you get down and put something in there that takes the place of part of the water. It has to go someplace, so it went up. So he thought to himself, he knew apparently that gold and silver weigh differently. So he figured out that if he would put his crown in the water and displace it, if it weighed a certain amount, he knew it would be all gold, and if it weighed different amount. Well, it wouldn't be all gold. They have some of their metal in with it, which he suspected would be silver. And he was so tickled about it, so the story goes that he got out of the bathtub and he went running through the town yelling, "Eureka, I found it, I figured it out." Okay. Nobody ever said whether he had his clothes on or not when he was running through town.
Well, it wouldn't, if the size was the same, it would, the gold and silver wouldn't make a difference, would it? In the way the water rose up?
Okay, well, gold and silver weigh different amounts.
I know they weigh different amount, but the weight doesn't matter, does it?
Well, how much water it displaces?
Yeah. Does it matter?
In the area, because the area would come involved, become involved with that too then. Uh-huh.
Well, see, to me, if you had like a plastic shape and a gold shape, exactly the same size, push them both underwater, they would, or one at a time, then they would replace the same amount. If the size was the same, wouldn't they? I don't think the plastic would be much lighter in weight. But I think the water would come up exactly the same, whichever one you put in.
I got a feeling that the plastic would probably be pretty close to floating on top, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, you'd have to push it under.
Yeah. Okay, if you push it under, sure. You got your hand with it. Well, you got another displacement problem.
Well, we make it light and heavy enough so it will go under, but not as heavy as the gold. They both will go under on their own weight.
Who's going to answer this one?
I think the water would come up exactly the same. I don't think the weight matters. Right. It's the replacement of the size. Yeah.
You can weigh the crown, find out how much the crown weighed, and take an equal amount of gold, and see how much water the gold displaces.
I think
and
if it was
how much water the crown displaces, and
if the size was the same, it would replace the same.
Oh, so you're not talking about equal sizes?
Well, listen. The same weight of gold would be a different size than the same weight of silver.
Yeah.
They would displace a different amount.
That's
mm-hmm.
What it
means. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're different area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then there are some other things that we might want to be aware of. When you're using your right brain, you are going to be more free of anxiety than you would be if you were using your left brain. And that goes along with the idea of daydreaming too. You know that works out, doesn't it? Okay? If you're using your left brain, you got all these gears going and are doing these verbal skills and everything for yourself, and you're probably anxious, much more anxious. But if you are working with your right brain, you kind of get lost. You lose the time. How many of you have ever done anything for fun and some hobby that you really enjoy doing, and you discover that you really have forgotten what time it was?
Sure.
Anybody ever done that? Okay, that's your right brain was working, and then somebody comes in and tells you, "Hey, it's time to get up and get lunch," and then you, "Oh no, I don't want to be bothered." Even people that are not aware of time are much more apt to be right brain dominant than a left brain type person, because they're very clock watchers. And they're very conscious of time. Some folks it's much more important to them to get someplace on time than it is to finish a task. So you'll find the two that people, you're either task orientated or you're time orientated. Dominantly, you know, okay? You've probably got both of them going for you, but you're much more one way or another. And so that if you were task orientated, you would be right brain dominant. And if you were very time orientated, you would be left brain dominant. All right, we want to do a little bit more, some more drawing. And one thing we want to make sure about drawing right now would be some way for us to keep, and for you to keep tabs on how far along in this drawing are you in your life? And how do you draw things and how do you see things? And this is going to be a neat record for you to be able to keep. And if you want to share it with somebody someday, fine. If you want to bring it back on Thursday with you when you come back, that's great. But you can do the drawing if you'd like to, and hide it in some drawer if you'd like to. You don't want anybody to see it. But we know one thing, that this is not any kind of a situation where you're going to have to worry about doing it right or wrong or anything else like that. It's that you're doing it. So if you would each take a piece of paper and fold it in half like this. This is going to be your neat record of where you are as far as drying is concerned now, at this point in time. Okay, on each side of this, you're going to have four sides of paper here that you can draw on. So on the first part here, if you would just put down a comment at the top of the page, and then you'll have a chance later on to draw and do some drawing out of class or right during class if you want in a little few minutes. Okay, on page one, would you draw a person? Okay, that's the only information I'm going to say for you. How you visualize a person is going to, don't start drawing now, just if you write it down at the top of the page, and then you'll have it, you go ahead and draw it later on. How you visualize a person is going to be up to you, whether it's a man or a lady, a boy or girl, or however you feel about it. It's your person, okay? Not you personally, but your type of person. All right, on the next page then, if you would draw a face. And the reason I'm going to mention the face is one that you are looking at the time when you're drawing it. Now for a lot of us, we haven't done too much of this, and looking at somebody else's actual face and drawing it. There again, don't be too concerned about where you are at this point about being able to draw it very well or not so well. It's just what you, how you can draw a face now, how you visualize a face, but have it be one that you're actually looking at. If you can find somebody asleep, it's a good way to do it. Almost got one over here. Okay. We'll let Dave go to sleep for a while and then draw. The reason for doing that is because it probably sits still long enough for you to do it. But otherwise, talk somebody into sitting for a little while. And just do the face down about an exercise. The reason for doing the face is that, for the most part, all of us, that's one thing that we really do the most looking at of people. When you're talking to them, you'll eyeball them, you know, for the most part, and things like that. We also know for ourselves, if somebody were drawing us, it would be important to us as a person that they would draw us looking the way we do, or bring out our best points if possible or something. And so we also know that if we're drawing somebody else, that's going to be a real concern too, isn't it? That's going to be something you really care. You know they probably feel the same way as you do, and so you care about having it drawn the way they are. And so faces are very, very personal to us, and they also would be to everybody else. So you're more apt to try to do a better job on drawing a face than you would on anything else you'll ever draw, or want to draw better, do a better job.
Did you say you wanted head on straight?
No, I didn't say.
Doesn't talk
to you, whatever.
Could be side or three fourths or whatever.
Anything you want to
do.
All right. You have eyes closed, eyes open, whatever you talk to the person you're doing. Okay, on page three then. Draw your hand. Now, everybody seems to be right-handed here, don't they? So I'll only give instructions out for the right hand. Since you will be drawing with your right hand, then the other hand that you have available for you to look at and draw and everything is your left hand. So get your left hand in some comfortable position. You can wad it up just or however you want it, and have it in a position that you can leave it for a little while. So while you're drawing, the only thing, if I catch you in a way, this is cheating. If you would put down your hand and trace around. You don't need to do that. Okay. Draw it like you see it off someplace. Put it someplace in a comfortable position. Another thing is that this is really neat because you've always got something with you that you can draw. You know, when things get boring or you're listening to a lecture and you want something more interesting to do, you know, that hand is right there, isn't it? And you usually have a little piece of paper, even if it's a tiny one. You can always move it around in different ways. It's the neatest subject and you've got it with you all the time. And you can draw it many different ways. It looks different this way than this way and all over. And see if you can get the wrinkles in or fingernails. If you, like me, and you got a broken finger and you want to make sure that shows up, do it. It's there. So draw whatever you see on that one. Okay, you got one more side then. Now let's draw something else. So far everything has kind of gone along with people And God made type things, and so let's do something that's man-made. So if you would pick a chair, some chair, wherever you want to be and see it from whatever angle you want, but stay at that particular angle and draw it. If you want to say something to yourself about a chair, and if you're feeding your brain with some information about it, and you say to yourself, I'm going to draw it so I'm able to sit on it, that would be left type, left brain information that you're giving yourself right then. The ability to be able to sit on it. It also feeds some information about balancing kind of to your right side. But when you're drawing it, don't say, you worry about saying to yourself that that's a rung of a chair, an arm or a leg or something else like that. Just draw it the way you see it. And then for sure your right brain will be doing the drawing for you. Okay, that's assignment number one for those. Okay, I'm going to give you one more assignment. And you need two sheets of paper for this. And so you would take two sheets for yourself and the layer of the paper.
Thank you.
Okay, now you remember these last drawings that you're doing are a record of what you draw and how you draw at this point. And it's just going to be fun for you to keep as your own record. These next two assignments are going to be to help open you up to the possibility of of using a whole piece of paper and not being inhibited in any way, but just getting kind of free. And that means if you would start at the outside edge of your paper, at least you're out there, aren't you? And you work yourself in on these two drawings. On the first one, if you would limit yourself to using vertical and horizontal lines only. Okay, horizontal is this way and vertical is this way. If you would do one continuous line drawing, that's what these are. Both of them are going to be bad. And if you would do the first one then with vertical and horizontal lines only, and then on the second page, and the reason for giving you two sheets is that you can even put these side by side and you don't have to flip if you want to kind of look at them later on together. On the second one, do one continuous line drawing, also, but add another dimension, and that's using diagonal lines to it. So you've got vertical and horizontal and diagonal lines.
On the second one?
On the second one. Now, you can cross over lines if you would like to and everything, you come up with some of the neatest patterns and the really beautiful design work. If you want to give yourself an added challenge to it, make a requirement of yourself that you cannot cross over any line when you're getting to another space. So that however you get to the center eventually, you have not had one line cross over another one. Now somewhere, pardon?
Well, I'm just going to say this first sheet where you said right only, vertical and horizontal.
You want that to be one continuous line
drawing? Both of these are one continuous line drawing.
One continuous line. Mm-hmm. Good.
But if you want to add another challenge to it, then make it so that you can't ever cross over one line over another. Try it both ways, you know, and see the difference in the feeling that you get and the possibilities that you come up with. You may get tired as you're going in toward the center, but if you're at any time you quit, well then start in again where you left off with the line. If you want to go on from there and give yourself some more challenges, do it another time with all wavy lines or something like that. Or another time with mixtures of all kinds and things like all kinds of possibilities. But you can spend a lot of time and energy training yourself to do some gorgeous work and with just these kinds of problems and exercises. So they're really neat. But they do open up for yourself the possibility of using the whole page by starting out on the outside edge and going, working toward the center is a real good thing to do. Okay, we have a moment for questions if you have any at this point.
Do you want this to freehand or using
freehand? Yeah, let's do it freehand, okay? The straight lines that you people are going to do as artists, the more you do them freehand, the better you're going to get, and it's going to be beautiful. But they're going to have a character to it that you never get with the line that you've used a ruler for, with, for in order to be able to accomplish. So these are all freehand type things. If it's sometime later on you want to try it with other types of instruments, fine. But your line work will be just gorgeous if you just do it freehand. Okay, anything else? Questions? Well, you have about 2 or 3 minutes that you can start in on this if you'd like to. Yeah. Then you can stay as long as you want to if you care to. But as far as the tape is concerned, it would be finished at this point. Except to say that on Thursday, when you come back, we've got some more exercises for you to do. And in the meantime, there's a lot to keep you busy in doing your drawing. There'll be plenty of things that we'll be talking about, more things that the right brain can do for you to advantage. Remember that you've got both sides of the brain now, and you want to be able to turn one on when you want it, and turn the other on when you want to use it to advantage. Because they're both there and available. And they only get used as much as we give them the chance to be used.